This is Sarah Troop, and you're listening to the Cabinet of Curiosities. This week's episode, the BEKs. A best friend of mine for over 10 years now, Gabriel, was friends with a guy named Brian Bethel, a journalist who I had spoken to on a number of occasions. I remember him well as a stickler for facts and honesty. He would always use his words in a very deliberate manner. In result, this story of Brian's holds even more weight. His original telling was posted by him in 1998 on an old news group that we used to frequent, which now no longer exists. I first heard about the BEKs in 1999. It was a favorite subject among my circle of friends, and references to the BEKs became the new slang. Spilled milk, hurricanes, missing pets. We blamed it all on the BEKs. The years passed, and I'd bring it up to people from time to time, but no one I'd spoken to ever seemed familiar with it. Until recently, that is. You can find retellings of it all over the internet now, but nothing compares to hearing the story from Brian. He always starts it off this way. I don't know what I'd call this story if I was submitting it for publication in Fate or something of its ilk. Brian versus the evil, black-eyed, possibly vampiric or demonic, but at least not bloody normal, kids. Doesn't have much of a ring to it. But at least that's an accurate title. As so many things do, it all started out innocently. Brian's internet service provider used to have offices in a shopping center where there was a Dropbox for payments. Since his monthly bill was due the next day, he left his apartment around 9:30 at night. It was maybe a 10 or 15 minute drive to downtown in a smallish town with a population of about 110,000. Right next to the Dropbox location was a $1.50 movie theater. At the time, the place was featuring that masterwork of modern film, Mortal Kombat. He drove by the theater on the way, into the center proper, and pulled into an empty parking space. Using the glow of the marquee to write out his check, Brian was startled when he heard a knock on the driver's side window of his car. He looked over and saw two children staring at him from the street. Brian then describes them, omitting the one feature, which you can guess what that was by now. He didn't realize it until about halfway through the conversation. Both appeared to be in that semi-mystical stage of life children get into, where you can't exactly tell their age. Both were boys. And my initial impression was that they were somewhere between 10 and 14. Boy number one was a spokesman. Boy number two didn't speak during the entire conversation. At least not in words. Boy number one was slightly taller than his companion, wearing a pullover hooded shirt with a sort of gray checked pattern and jeans. I couldn't see his shoes. His skin was olive-colored and had curly, medium-length brown hair. He exuded an air of quiet confidence. Boy number two had pale skin with a trace of freckles. His primary characteristic seemed to be looking around nervously. He was dressed in a similar manner to his companion, but his pullover was a light green color, and his hair was a sort of pale orange. They didn't appear to be related, at least directly. It was at this point that Brian assumed the boys were going to hit him up for money. And this was when the air changed. Brian was now in a sudden panic over the appearance of the two boys. He explains, "I was confused, but an overwhelming sense of fear and unearthliness rushed in nonetheless." The spokesman smiled, and the sight of it for some inexplicable reason, chilled my blood. I could feel fight-or-flight responses kicking in. Something I knew instinctually was not right, but I didn't know what it could possibly be. Brian then rolled down the window slightly and asked, "Yes?" The spokesman smiled again and explained with an unnatural calm, eloquence, and diction for a child that they wanted to go watch the movie, but that they had forgotten their money at home. They wanted to go home and get their money. And could Brian help them out? Now, typically kids are usually apologetic and flustered when addressing adults. People generally teach them that when they talk to adults, they're usually bothering them for one reason or another, and they should at least be polite. But this kid was in no way fitting the mold. His command of language was incredible, and he showed no signs of fear. He spoke as if Brian's help was a foregone conclusion. When he grinned, it was as if he was trying to say, "I know something, and you're not going to like it. But the only way you're going to find out what it is will be to do what I say." "Well," was the best reply that Brian could offer. And here is where it starts to get strange. The quiet companion looked at the spokesman with a mixture of confusion and guilt on his face. He seemed in some ways shocked, not with his friend's brusque manner, but that Brian didn't immediately open the door. He eyed Brian nervously. The spokesman seemed a bit perturbed, too, and Brian was still registering that something was wrong with both. The spokesman spoke again, with a voice a car salesman would bargain with the devil for. "Now, we just want to go to our house, and we're just two little boys." That really scared him. Something in the tone and diction sent off alarm bells. His mind was frantically trying to process what it was perceiving about the two figures that was wrong. "What movie were you going to see?" he asked finally. "Mortal Kombat, of course," the spokesman said. The silent one nodded in affirmation, standing a couple paces behind. Brian glanced back at the marquee and at the clock in his car. Mortal Kombat had been playing for an hour, and it was the last showing of the evening. The silent one looked increasingly nervous. "Come on, mister. Let us in." "We can't get in your car until you do, you know," the spokesman said soothingly. "Just let us in, and we'll be gone before you know it. We'll go to our mother's house." Brian and the boy finally locked eyes, and to his horror, he realized his hand had strayed toward the door lock, which was engaged, and he was in the process of opening it. Brian pulled away, maybe a bit too violently, but it did force him to look away from the boy, and allowed his mind to snap into sharp focus. For the first time, he noticed their eyes. They were coal black, no pupil, no iris, just two staring orbs, reflecting the red and white light of the marquee. At that point, Brian knew his expression had betrayed him. The silent one had a look of horror on his face, while the spokesman, on the other hand, wore a mask of anger. "Come on, mister," he said. "We won't hurt you. You have to let us in. We don't have a gun." This last statement scared the living hell out of Brian, because at that point, the boy was plainly saying, "We don't need a gun." He noticed Brian's hand shooting down toward the gear shift. The spokesman's final words contained an anger that was complete and whole, and yet contained, in some respects, a tone of panic. "We can't come in unless you tell us it's okay. Let us in." The car ripped into reverse and tore out of the parking lot. He noticed the boys in his peripheral vision, and stole a quick glance back. But they were gone. The sidewalk by the theater was deserted. Brian drove home in a heightened state of panic. Had anyone attempted to stop him, he would have run on through and faced the consequences later. He arrived home and bolted into the house, scanning all around, including the sky. He asked himself over and over again, "What did I see?" Maybe nothing more than some kids looking for a ride. A friend suggested that they were vampires, what with the old let us in bit, in his compelled response to open the door, that and the we'll go see our mother thing. Brian is still not sure what they were, but soon after there came a chilling epilogue. Brian called his best friend, Chad, and talked to him briefly. He had two female friends with him at the time, both professing some kind of psychic ability. As he started telling Chad the story, he was on the speakerphone so they could all hear, he left out the part about the black eyes for the kicker. One of the women interrupted. "These children have black eyes, right?" she asked. "I mean, all black eyes." Brian was taken aback, but answered affirmatively. She said, "One night last week, I had a dream about children with black eyes. They were outside my house, wanting to be let in. But there was something wrong with them. It took me a while to realize it was the eyes." Now, Brian hadn't even gotten as far as them wanting to come in. "What did you do?" he asked. "I kept the doors and windows locked," she said. "I knew if they came in, they would kill me. And they would have killed you too, if you had let them into your car." So, fast forward to the now. Claims of BEK sightings are rampant. They've been seen at the YMCA, at the local Starbucks, and that house of deliciousness, Red Lobster. The BEKs, and Brian too, have all been relegated to the urban legends file by people who are just now discovering the story. Theories ranging from aliens to contact lenses to medical rarities have been put forth. But for me, none of them logically apply. Although many of the news stories are ridiculous and clearly fabricated, some of them seem more likely. Like this story from a Marine stationed at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. This happened on a weekend in November of 2009. It was a weekend, so almost all of the barracks residents where he lived were out, or home, either drinking or sleeping. Our Marine had stayed in that weekend because he was broke. While watching TV, there came a knock at the door. Figuring it was his roommate who had lost his key again, he went and opened it. But instead of a drunken roommate, there were two little kids standing on the walkway. He explained, "I don't know what it was about them, but as a Marine, we're always told to listen to that little voice in your head, because it just might save your life from an IED, an improvised explosive device." Right then, that voice was screaming at me to shut the door and lock it. There was also the other detail, that these kids had absolutely pitch black eyes. No white or any other color to them whatsoever, just black. The Marine questioned them as to what they were doing there so late. The kids responded by saying that it was really cold out and they wanted to come in and read. Now this reply was even more confusing, as what kid wants to read anymore in the first place? And there was no mention of any parents or anything else you would expect a couple of lost kids to say. He took a quick look around the outside hallways. He was on the third floor, mind you. But there was no one in sight. As he turned back to the kids, he noticed that they had taken a couple steps closer. The feeling of being hunted, like these kids were predators and out for their next meal, became overwhelming. This is the moment when instinct gave way to reason, and Armarine shut the door and locked it. There was a constant knocking for the next 5 minutes before he heard the window rattle, and then nothing. Special thanks to Gabriel Oyamont, Brad Alsabrook, and Brian Bethel. Extra special thanks to the show's one-man support team, Steve Troop. You can find out more about the subjects featured on the Cabinet of Curiosities by visiting us at the show's website, cabinetofcuriositiespodcast.com. You can also find us on the show's Facebook page. I'm your host, Sarah Troop. Thanks for listening. Open strange doors that we never close again.